This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome to episode 140. This is the IT in the D Show. If you have never listened to us, one of our reviewers on iTunes calls us a love child between Nerdist and Attack of the Show. We'll take that all day long. Segment one, we'll be talking about me and Dave's trip to Philly and a bunch of the stuff the IT tech guys talk about locally. Segment two, we have Kasten Thomas here from Interworks. He's a wireless security guru. We're going to be talking about machine learning. Interested to know about that? Last but not least, we got Jeremiah here, Dr. Hook from Daily Detroit, who's going to be talking about all things Detroit, and we're looking forward to that conversation.
Trying to tell us why we're wrong about Philadelphia.
Dave, hit the button.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is Max Headroom, and what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
You're listening to the IT in the D Show.
Hi, it's Count Chocula, and you're listening to IT in the D. Whatever the hell that is.
Just where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything with that! No!
I used to hang out at the Mugumbo Bar. It was a rough place, the seediest dive on the wharf, populated with every reject and cutthroat from Bombay to Calcutta. It's worse than Detroit.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Then don't come! Shut up!
Dig, you IT geeks. This is Dre DiMatteo from Sons of Anarchy. You are listening to IT in the D.
So what happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bumhole?
Exactly. Come on.
What the hell with this? I'm calling a break. We'll come back to the D Show.
Hi, this is Ralph Macchio, and you're listening to IT in the D Show. Wax on, you know what.
Bob loves it in the can.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zapka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT in the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the geek off.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, John Kreese from the Karate Kid movie. And you're listening to IT in the D.
Yes, Sensei!
Are we at a break yet?
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT in the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds.
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump. The IT and the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Here, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey, I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear, that's a fact.
That's why I like it in the can.
Which kind of scares the shit out of me.
Shut up, Barry.
Hello, everybody, this is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men. I'm a techie, I'm a nerd, fellow podcaster. My favorite podcast is IT in the D.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
It's just too big. It's way too big.
We got screwed at the same time.
Yeah. Really? Should we talk about this? We tag team. Should I keep going or should I stop?
We just lost our clean tag on iTunes.
This is Robert Hayes, a Ted Stryker to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the Mugumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat stick.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guy. Ho!
My name is Michael Zapsik from AMC's Comic Book Man. You're listening to IT and the D. Come.
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do. The question is what aren't we going to do.
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Live in Podcast Detroit, this is the often imitated, never duplicated IT in the D Show, and we are broadcasting live from our very own studios here in beautiful Ferndale, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy, always here with Captain Soundboard, Dave the Geek. Nuri, the FNG, is in the house. Find us online, itinthed.com. Special shout out to Randy and Ian in Twittersville. They'll be filling up our Twitter sphere. That's /ITND. Like, give us a like on Facebook /ITND. We also have an app out at Podcast Detroit, Apple and Android. I was going to say Apple and iOS, like I always do. And last but not least, we got approved this morning.
We're tired. We're
I know.
So tired.
Last but not least, we got approved this morning that you can find us on Google Play Music.
Hooray.
So if that is your slow clap. It's just another way. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, all that good stuff. But now
one more way we can annoy people.
Google Play Music.
I was going to say slowly taking over the world, but I guess that works too.
Yeah. Well, we looked at it. It's a little clunky still. It's not perfect. It just basically pulled in basically our entire library. PC only, mobile's not working.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, right? So, like, which just kind of defeats the whole purpose. Right. So they got some hiccups to iron out.
You can get Google Play Music on your iPhone too, just FYI.
So yeah, no, you can use. I looked up.
I can get iTunes on my PC. Why wouldn't you be able to get it? Yeah,
you can get QuickTime on your PC.
Oh, that'd be a great thing to do. You should get it and then just go right ahead and uninstall it right away. That's how that works.
But hey, do us a favor, mark your calendars. We got a couple big events coming up. This Thursday, April 21st, we're going to be at the Blackfin Royal Oak for one of our casual networking events. No speakers, no cover, no buttholes. Hashtag no buttholes. Just IT people, just networking, looking for work, trying to just meet the next client, whatever it is that IT guys do.
Or want to just have some drinks and hang out.
Or just have some drinks and not talk to anyone. Either one, whatever whatever it is, we will not, yeah, exactly.
Drink Jaeger.
We will not judge you. And then May the 5th, which is Cinco de Mayo. We're going to have a podcast, Metro Detroit podcaster meetup downstairs at Activate Gaming. We got like 150 RSVPs. I'm scared.
Yeah, between attending and interested, yeah, it's getting a little weird.
But we're going to be playing Mario Kart and talking podcasting again. No agenda,
podcasts,
no speakers, no cover.
Properties.
Yeah, exactly.
It's demented and sad, but social.
Can we have a tequila sponsor? I feel like we need a tequila sponsor.
No, we're going to have mayonnaise sponsors for Cinco de Mayo.
Oh. We're gonna
Miracle Whip.
No Miracle Whip. No,
but looking at the construction outside, maybe it could turn into Sinkhole de Mayo.
Oh. So speaking of segment two, we're going to be joined by Kasten Thomas from Innerworks, one of our favorite guests. He's going to be talking about something I've never heard of, which is a machine learning in the world of security and wireless security. So I'm very looking forward to that conversation. Also, last minute replacement, but always one of our favorites, Jeremiah Dr. Hook is here from Daily Detroit, talking all things Detroit. And basically with me and Dave coming back from Philly, we're going to have a fun conversation doing Philly versus Detroit. But first, this show is brought to you by Giftagram. Mother's Day is quickly approaching, and if you're like me, I can never figure out what to buy my mother. She's probably one of the biggest pains because nothing's ever good enough. You can't take her to restaurants. Flowers die. I have enough vases, Bobby. I don't need any candles.
You also got to worry about what the kids are getting your wife for Mother's Day.
Precisely.
You can't win.
And so here, apps always come out that they speak to me. This one speaks to me because it just fits into my laziness. Giftagram, no, it's an app that you can send. It says a thoughtful gift, but you can send, basically it's the top 0.01% of all your gifts. Like if you go to like the online e-tailers,
right,
or the store, it's literally three clicks. You can buy anything from $20 truffles to a $500 mixer, a Bluetooth speaker, flower of the month. Like they have basically, it's like that. Hey, look, there's five things down. That'd be perfect for mom.
Corey Haim singing happy birthday.
Corey Haim singing happy birthday.
So basically, it's curated, right? So you're not like going through pages and pages of stuff on Amazon or something looking for something. This is like the cream of the crop.
There's like seven categories.
Is it? It's curated, but is it artisanal?
It's always artisanal.
It springs forth from a website.
But it's literally like I bought my mother coffee mugs that said mom on it, because that's what moms always like, is things that say mom on it.
Best mom ever.
Like three clicks, I was out.
Nice.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. The gifts are second to none. They have, like, so you can buy scotch. I mean, literally, like, 3 months worth of roses. Like, the gifts are great. I mean, literally, nice. Everything in there is like, wow, cool. And literally, any $20 to $500 gifts. It's everywhere in between.
It's like no-thought gifting almost, right?
It's
people
perfect.
Stress out so much about what they're going to get people for things, right? So here you've got a list of stuff that's ready to go pretty much.
And here's the best part. Listeners of this podcast can get $20 off your first gift on Giftagram. Just download the app on iOS or Android and enter the gift code IT in the D, and you get $20 off your first gift and make your life a little bit easier. Appreciate the support.
We gotta figure out a way to like. We gotta figure out a random gift thing for getting people to download our app. We should figure that out. That's a good hook.
That is a good hook. I like it.
We gotta figure that out. We'll figure something out.
T-shirts. Everyone like shot glasses.
Shot glasses. T-shirts. Our crowd. Yeah. Beer steins. Yeah.
So
well, and one other thing. So we've got the podcaster meetup on May 5th this Sunday. We'll be over at the Detroit Pub. One of our buddies, Tom, from Stuart Artists Unlimited, has got a Detroit Music Unlimited or Detroit Music United event going on. And he asked us to come out there and set up shop as Podcast Detroit. So we'll be there hanging out from noon on until we have to go over to a wrestling event. But we'll be setting up shop there, talking to folks about our network, what it is that we do, how things work, and maybe recruit a couple new shows, who knows. We've got some impending announcements on that front with the studio and everything else. We'll kind of keep those a little close to the vest for the moment. And then let's not forget, the end of the month is rapidly approaching. My birthday weekend and yours, we will be at PenguinCon at the Westin in Southfield, last weekend of the month, Friday through Sunday.
Call the paramedics.
Exactly. It's going to be a good, fun, long weekend. We were just discussing the DJ gear setup. There were some emails going back and forth that I had to deal with over the weekend while we were in Philly about the podcast setup. We're going to have the podcasters there.
We'll be throwing an 80s party in one of the suites at the Southfield Westin. We will not only have kegs of beer, we will have our specialty drink concoctions, Health and Mana, so the red and blue. So that should be a big hit. With if you don't know what that is, you're not allowed to be in our suite. Even I know what that is.
I think everyone at PenguinCon will know what Mana and Health are.
I'd like to hold.
Well, right. We have a flyer. I'm going to have those printed up, and I think we'll hang one in all the elevators, possibly on a couple
That's
of floors.
That's what you do. Totally. Yeah.
So Dave and I are utterly and physically and mentally, I think, all of the above exhausted. We just spent the
I truly understand the words, and I'm spent.
We just spent the entire weekend. I've never been to Philadelphia before, and we got the chance to go for an event, and I just...
Well, so we asked a buddy. You know, a buddy's getting married, and we said, hey, you know, you want to go to Vegas, you know, the typical bachelor party thing. He's like, no, there's this event in Philadelphia that I want to go to, and it's this weekend, you know, this coming up, the weekend, it's a couple months ago, obviously. And we're like, all right, so you don't want us to spend a couple grand on hotel rooms and flights for Vegas, you want us to spend a couple hundred on flights and hotels in Philly, well, we'll go do it upright. Let's go to Philly.
And I ate my first cheesesteak ever in Philly and all the way to my fourth. And I don't think I can eat for another week.
No, I seriously have still not eaten. Like, I ate nothing today.
It was so weird. I offered before the show, I'm like, hey, let's get some pizza or something. Dave's like, yeah, I'm never eating again.
Dude, you know, you don't understand. So we land Friday afternoon. Pro tip number one: never land at an airport and try to get to a hotel at rush hour in a major city. That was genius move number one. Number two. So we get to the hotel, we drop our shit off, and we're like, all right. And I'd gone on Yelp in the Philadelphia Talk area and said, hey, look, help a friend out from Detroit. We're looking for dive bars, like not I'm going to get stabbed dive bars, but like, you know, that old man sitting on the corner hasn't moved in 40 years dive bars. And
he may actually be dead.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And so I started getting comments back. And as I'm getting comments, I'm looking them up. So the first place we go is the oldest bar in Philadelphia, McGillin's.
What a cool place.
Dude, just beautiful, dark wood, everything, everywhere. They're their own brewery. They have their own beer.
Down a dead-end street, which is even cooler.
Oh, yeah, down a dead-end street. Yeah, phenomenal. And so then, long story short, we'll get into this when we start talking about Philly and Detroit. Eight bars later, we decide that it's time for cheesesteaks. And so, you know, it's you know, there's Pat's versus Geno's is the fate. Like, so
it's the same as Detroit with Lafayette American.
Yeah. So, you know, if you don't know, cheesesteaks to Philly are Coney's here. You know, so, you know, you ask somebody in Philly who's got the best cheesesteak, you ask 10 people, you get 10 different answers. So
and they're as passionate about it as we are about Coney's.
Oh, they're as passionate about it as they are their sports teams.
Right.
So we're like, all right, well, Pat's and Geno's are the two famous ones. Let's hop in the Uber. You know, it's 2 a.m. We're toasty. They're open 24 hours. Let's go. So the Uber drops us off outside of Pat's. And so we're like, all right, well, this is the first one. We'll try this. And it's not like – I mean, it's a cheese – like, number one, they're all footlongs. You can't get anything smaller than a footlong. And they're on the torpedo buns. And
they're greasy.
Oh yeah, grease it, oil it, spit, yeah. So we order cheesesteaks. Whiz wit, gotta get them with the cheese whiz. And it's hilarious how every place does it. It's basically they stick Excalibur, or like the kitchen version of Excalibur, in they plunge it into the vat of cheese whiz, hold aloft their flaming sword, slap it down the sub, and that's how your cheese whiz gets on the sub. So we eat that. Meh, wasn't great. So then we're like, Gino's, it's right across the corner. I'm not really all that hungry anymore, but we're here. Let's go try Gino's. So then we go across the street to Gino's, and we take a bite. And it's like the best thing we've ever had in our life. Like it killed Pat's hands down.
But the thing is, the locals all say, like, don't go to Gino's. Gino's sucks. Like it's a thing. Like I was reading their Yelp reviews.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone says, like, oh, if you're local, no one eats there. But this was like the greatest sandwich I ever had.
All that does is make me question the locals.
Right.
Because, yeah, Gino's was somebody. So let's put this in context. The five of us, because we had picked up some stragglers, and we may or may not tell that story later, demolished two entire cheesesteaks. In the span of about 15 minutes.
Your foot-long meat.
Foot-long meat, cheese whiz, packed, loaded. Seriously. And then we ate – and I still don't even know how we ate more Saturday or Sunday. Like seriously, I feel no desire to eat at all ever. But I mean Philly, great town, loved going around, loved
yakking with people. I walked up the Rocky Sips. That was a highlight.
With breaks, yeah. Again, shout out to Girl Scout Troop 5632 for earning their merit badge for helping you back down.
I made it down.
But yeah, see, we did. We went inside. Oh, and Bill, Bob was furious. He was infuriated. You can't ring the Liberty Bell. Bob was mad that you cannot.
Figured the Liberty Bell would be like in an open park. There's the bell, and like some.
That's how it broke, Bob.
Good.
No, it broke in transit.
I just want to blame Bob for things.
When I like said, like once an hour, like some old man comes and pulls this rope, and then it rings.
You buy the lottery ticket. You get to if your number comes up, you get to be the one to ring the bell.
It's like the Glockenspiel at Franken, with everybody waits for it, and then you hear it ring, and then you go, yay! And then you go to the next thing.
Yeah.
So we're like, we got to go to Independence Hall, and it was like basically
it's in a building that you can't get into for whatever reason. It was closed, and so everybody was taking pictures of the bell through the window. It was a phenomenal experience. Yeah.
But honest to God, we might talk about it later, but we were like happy to be there. But in the same token, we were sad for the same reasons. Like when I go to San Francisco and walk from the ballpark to the wharf, like, God, this could have been Detroit.
Totally.
You know, and you go to Philly and you're like, God, this could have been Detroit.
I think it still could be. We just have to get our act together.
But just the way the art.
You know what? Let's say this for segment three. I'm just kidding. No, I don't think it's ever going to be. And we'll get into why in segment three.
Okay.
But hey, huge news that we've been tracking.
Huge.
Bodie McBoatface is won the vote.
Yes. It's amazing. The t-shirts are out already.
Do you think they're going to go through with it? I mean, they put those online polls out all the time and they're like, yeah, this was the official winner, but no, unfortunately, the Time Person of the Year is not Bernie Sanders. Right? I mean, are they going to go with it?
The t-shirts are out.
They are.
I mean, it's official.
Dude, the SS Bodie McBoatface.
And this is like a $200 million like research vessel? It's a legit,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and speaking of Bernie, for what it's worth, travel note for those of you out there. We land back in D.C. or D.C. God, I am so brain dead. Detroit yesterday. And there's a guy walking through the airport. Huge guy. Wearing a Bernie effing, except it didn't say
spelled
effing,
out
Sanders shirt, t-shirt, just walking around the airport. Like, stay classy. That's just good for you.
I'm going to print up some Hillary effing Clinton t-shirts and give those out to like local homeless folks. It'll be great.
That, outstanding. Yeah. Didn't get it. So yeah, Bodie McBoatface won. And then the other story, because we always track them and talk about them, is Uber.
What is up with them?
So they released their transparency report that said they wound up giving 13 million records over to various government agencies about rides taken, where they were taken, pickups, destinations.
Like, are we talking metadata or are we talking personal data?
No, data.
Data.
Okay. No, data.
So not like 37 not like, people in Rochester no, Hills data. Like Bob.
Yeah. Because okay. They're trying like
Bob.
Well, no. The worst part about it is that Uber themselves said in their transparency report press release that you know, a lot of the requests were extremely ambiguous with no real definition as to what the data was needed for or would be used for, and yet they still complied and gave them the data.
It's like, I need all people who took a trip to San Francisco Airport today.
Yeah.
Or something, just generic broad strokes.
And they were like, okay, here's the list.
Well, I think that's because they've got ongoing issues with a lot of governments around what they're doing. So
this is just
they're not in a position to bargain like an Apple or a Google is.
Oh, but that's totally what you do. You know, when like, you know, if somebody's picking on you, by all means, you know, try to – maybe if you try to be nice to them, they'll stop being assholes.
Oh, I mean, I agree with you, but things change when you – when Uber goes from being, you know, the scrappy startup to now like a billion valuation where, you know, they get treated a lot. They're going to take things and do things a lot differently.
You know what I did today, Dave?
Yeah, they should be tighter about their data.
You know what you I think? Did today? Huh. You know how we did reads not too long ago for Drive with Uber?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I signed up today.
Did you really?
To be an Uber driver. I've been talking about this for three months. I finally pulled the trigger today and I signed up. The background check's going through. And yeah, so now if I'm bored on Saturdays, I'm going to turn the button on and start driving for Uber.
Maybe now you'll keep your car clean.
That's going to be my excuse to clean my car. What's that smell? I had White Castles today for lunch. Sorry.
One star.
Two days ago.
His car smelled like White Castle.
Yeah, there's leftover White Castle on the front seat.
Driver would not stop farting.
You're playing bad 80s music.
No, I want to play the podcast, make them listen to it.
Yeah, what you better. Should do is report your modern car to fit the standards, but then show up in the Caddy.
No one's going to complain.
No, no one would ever. They'd be like, this is the best ever. There'd be like hashtag Bob Uber selfie all over town.
I want to do it for the Woodward Dream Cruise.
Whoa, that's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't. The Grand National, I just read, signed a deal. Like, doesn't Seattle have like the monster trucks for Uber? Like, I don't get why you can't do classics in Detroit. That makes no sense.
That would be brilliant.
We've been talking about that for like, what, like two and a half years now?
Yeah.
You've had the guy on the show before, haven't you?
I brought it up. I said, if you don't do it, I'm going to call the company Unter and I'm going to do it.
Which is Unter.
Exactly. Which the .co is available.
Is there going to be some sort of like German ride-sharing battle? Unter versus Uber? Just get like battle royale on the streets?
Well, the problem is Uber means like super or like above, and Unter means like the bowels, like the the underbelly. So I don't know if I want to –
Accurate.
So exactly. I don't know if I want to, you know, beat my chest to that one.
Well, the Uber's logo looks like the
it's
bowels.
A butt now.
So
speaking of bowels –
Go ahead.
This is one of the – I feel so bad for this guy. So everyone has a story where guy meets girl on computer.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, girl shows some booby and says, I want to, you know, show me yours. So dude pans down his webcam and shows his junk. And in the meanwhile, she's capturing it all. And when they're done, she says, I'm posting it to YouTube unless you give me $3,000. And apparently this is a thing now. So,
No. She posted it to YouTube and said, I'll take it down if you give me
$3,000. Oh, my God. I thought she said
no.
Ooh.
No.
Called his bluff right off the bat.
Yeah, no. She went for the kill right off the bat.
So
yeah.
That guy's gotten absolutely zero recourse except for writing a check. Am I correct?
Well, you're an idiot, number one.
You're right.
Because, I mean, let's check the backstory there. So it was a random message request from someone he was not connected to, showed up in the other folder in Facebook.
Red light number one.
Yeah, exactly. So he still went ahead and said yes, still went ahead and started talking to this random person, still went ahead and got let in. I'm going to give him the benefit out and let's just hope that this happened late at night and he was hammered. but, you know, obviously exercised horrific judgment. What's he going to do? Because I'm sure that account is a shill account. The YouTube account is a throwaway account. And more to the point, well, now that person has that video and just like all the conversations that have gone on about Snapchat and all the other stuff that's out there, once you put something like that out there, there's no taking
it
back.
Never goes away.
You're doomed. Move to Alaska.
Move
to Australia.
Yeah.
You're pretty much – well, Johnny Drama came back from it. Why can't this guy? I'm just saying.
It was a TV show, Bob.
No, it's real. It happened in Scooby-Doo. It has to be real.
On that same front, though, and we've talked about this a couple times now, ransomware in general as a quote-unquote industry hit $209 million in revenue taken in the first 3 months of 2016.
So projected $1 billion.
Yeah.
That's just in the U.S., right?
Yeah. And that's, you know, the crypto locker virus.
Is that just the guy calling from Microsoft saying – you know, give
well, and then they wind up installing the crypto locker virus on. Yeah, so well, but there's that. There's, you know, you get it from email attachments. You get it from, you know, all kinds of different ways. You can wind up with one on your system.
We had that thing that happened a couple weeks ago where the Mac version of Transmission got infected, right? So even legitimate software downloads can cause it. I mean,
didn't Sherry's computer got buried where every single file got encrypted and lost? She lost everything.
Yep.
As a photographer and no, and not a, she's not IT, so well, she's kind of IT, but didn't back up everything. Lost everything,
which is hilarious because I mean, Sherry did that to herself. Not remember when she locked herself out of her server.
Yeah, oh, I know.
We had that malware a couple weeks ago that was targeting hospitals, right?
Yep.
Which is scary.
Yeah, crypto-locking hospital data.
Right, because they're expected to have really bad security and really bad record-keeping, and that's crazy.
Well, and but that's sort of related. I want to make sure. Yeah, so locking yourself out of your own server. A guy is now backpedaling and saying that it was all a joke, but he went on to a security forum and basically said, hey, I just screwed up. And did an RM minus RF for you non-Linux Unix nerds.
This guy deleted his whole company.
Deleted his entire hosting company and all of his client websites. For those of you that are not Linux or Unix savvy, RM is remove. You add a dash RF onto that. That means make it recursive and get rid of every folder and file underneath from that point forward. So he started it at root and said nuke everything, and it did.
Why do you think he ran the command? I'm trying to figure that out because the article didn't say, like, if someone told me to do this, that
it it didn't get into the backstory.
It wasn't like format C, you know,
right? Right. People or Dell Tree, whatever. Yeah.
Or like, you know, it's been long enough. Yeah. So like, you know, when I left a company back in the day, and I left a button.
you just calculated it's been 10 years.
I totally did. I left a button on the laptop or on the screen of the server that basically said "clean up utility," you know, and make sure, you know, clear cache, and it was a DOD encryption. That night, anyway, it may or may not have happened.
Well, I wonder how many people back in the day, like, you know, like this is in the early days.
Well, it's no different than take your iPhone and set it to January 1st, 1970, and it bricked your phone.
Like, message form, how do I fix my computer? Format C. I tried it, nothing works now.
Who is general failure and why is he reading my hard disk?
Nice.
The coolest part about that command, though, there's a V switch. So you can basically tell it to be verbose.
Yep.
So it will continue deleting files, telling you which file it deletes until it says /bin/rm file not found.
Yep.
I did that once just for shits and giggles.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Tons of fun.
Yeah, just route all the backups to dev null. You'll be good.
Yeah, if there's like a computer you want to get rid of, then just run an Instagram video. That screen, that thing would rock. Just watch it go.
So Randy just said that he had directory variables in the script, but there was an error in the script, so the variables were passed as null, which means probably with a null variable, all there was a
went
slash.
Went down to root. Yep.
Right, and so that's root. Whoops.
All I know is my Commodore coding days, 30Go220.
And then put beep in the middle, right?
Exactly.
10 home, 20 suite, 30.
Did you get up to the turtle?
Totally.
Did you get up to the turtle program?
No, I don't remember that one.
All right, yep.
I still have the Commodore. I know they got root. You don't even need to plug it anymore. They have root programs or
emulators
for it. Yeah. So we're going to
break.
Yeah, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna be back with Cass and Thomas from Interworks talking wireless security and machine learning.
Thank you all for suffering through segment one with us as we're all brain dead.
We're gonna drink some Red Bull and we'll see you in segment
two. Perk up.
This is the IT in the D show and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D show.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is segment two of episode 140 of the number one ranked technology podcast on SoundCloud this week. This is the IT in the D show. We are broadcasting live here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Ferndale, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy, here with Dave, the geek, Nuri, the FNG. Find everything you need to know about us at itintheD.com. And if you want to listen to us live, download our app on Apple or Android at Podcast Detroit. Don't forget, mark your calendars. April 21st, Blackfin Royal Oak Casual Meetup. May the 5th, the Metro Detroit Podcasters Meetup. which is a new thing we're doing, trying to get all the local podcasters together and just see what happens. Insert beer and pizza and go.
What can possibly go wrong?
Precisely.
Precisely. Well, and the everything.
The one thing we did forget about when we were talking about, you know, we've got this Sunday at Detroit Pub. We got the weekend after that at PenguinCon. Motor City Comic Con is right around the corner, and we're going big.
Yeah.
We got booths. Yeah. We got stuff. We got press passes. We got – yay. We're just not going to be able to get excited about anything tonight, are we?
No. So I'm thinking about setup and logistics. No, plans are going to my head. Thanks a lot, Dave. So let's set things
better
over.
Better you than me for once.
Exactly. Let's send things over. We got an awesome guest lineup. We are joined by none other than Kasten Thomas from Interworks Technology. Appreciate coming to hang out with us.
Pleasure, guys.
Always good to have you in. Cards on table. You know, Interworks is one of our core sponsors for IT and the D. You help keep the lights on. We just wanted to say we appreciate it. And, you know, kind of throwing a softball to you, but, you know, why us versus why putting an ad in the yellow pages?
Well, you know, we don't look at ourselves as a sponsor. No offense.
Good. Neither do we.
We're not even a podcast.
He'd still like your check, though.
Well, you know what? There's probably a lot better places we could spend our money.
This is true.
No, really. Please don't go.
But really, our objective in sponsoring is that, you know, IT and the D represents Detroit. If I look back 5, 10, 20 years, it always seemed that we were thumping our chest. We're Detroit, and, you know, even though we're the murder capital of the world, we're really nice people. And we're shouting that from the rooftops, trying to convince ourselves that this is really a great place. And what I've noticed as Detroit's really made a comeback is that we're not trying to convince anybody else. You know, it comes back to the Applebee's. When are we going to stop hyping that the Applebee's opened up in Detroit? So,
it was actually as soon as Bob got stomach problems from Applebee's, that's when we stopped hyping it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But I mean, it seems like every other week now, there's an article from New York Times, whatever, talking about like Detroit's the next Brooklyn, and it's kind of being ridiculous.
Well, you know, I think the great revitalization is in how we view ourselves. I don't sense that we're trying to convince anybody that we're good anymore. You know, we know we're good.
That's because we're getting a Wahlburger. I mean, seriously, this is real.
Well, there you go. I mean, and IT
and Chick-fil-A. Don't forget Chick-fil-A. That
the Nike store.
Chick-fil-A is arriving.
This is huge.
Well, that's for crying out loud. We don't have any Jack in the Boxes, though. I noticed that one was in Denver.
Or a Hutton now. It's come.
Oh, they're gone. That's right.
That's right.
Well, you got to get in and out here. You got to. Oh, well, so we're going to sidebar all over the place.
Right, exactly. There's no Wiener Schnitzels out here. All on the West Coast.
For us, the reason we're being a sponsor is that IT and the D is an expression of what it means to be a Detroiter. You know, if I look at what makes up a Detroiter, we're genuine, a bit irreverent, respectful of who we are and where we came from, gritty, hands-on, rubber meets the road. And
us.
Is irreverent a good thing?
Yes.
Then I'll take it. Yeah. Take
it. It's infamous. We're bigger than famous.
Yeah, good.
You know, Detroiter's not going to stab you in the back. The venture capital that's coming into the area recognizes that, you know, from my standpoint, Detroit made the world mobile 100 years ago. There's absolutely no reason we can't do it again now. So this is a great place to be. We don't need to convince anybody. Just keep your nose to the grindstone, do your job, and that's what IT and the D is about. And you know what? When we look at that, how could we not be a part of it?
So speaking, good segue into mobility, right? Taking Detroit, that's kind of what Interworks, that's kind of like the backbone of your bane of your existence.
Yep, from the security side.
Yeah, precisely. But you brought up a phrase. We were having drinks the other day, and I never heard it before. You've been going to a ton of conferences lately, and usually there's a buzzword that comes out of a lot of these conferences, but machine learning.
Yeah.
Like, what in the blue hell is machine learning?
Oh, technically it's a part of artificial intelligence. And, you know, we're really concerned because, you know, machine learning is getting applied to a lot of areas. And vendors tend to drop in on the latest buzzword. And we're already seeing vendors starting to adopt the idea of data science and machine learning and artificial intelligence.
Well, because there's some that are good buzzwords that you're okay with. Then there's others like growth hacking that I want to throw through the window.
Yeah.
But I mean, like,
I would predict that in 6 months, machine learning will be one of those terms you want to throw through the window. Because everybody will be throwing it around.
Kind of like the big data of 6 months ago maybe? Or
yeah. Yeah, the big data of 2016.
Wow. What is big data? A lot of it.
Oh. What is machine learning when machines learn?
Run the cloud, someone else's computer. Oh.
No, I mean, so layman's terms, what is cloud is someone else's computer. Yeah, just like Dave said. But what is machine learning just for like the – like what do I tell my wife what machine learning is?
Think of it as a part of artificial intelligence. Machine learning is a mechanism for gaining feedback as you gain new data. And in the process, the machine develops more and more precise understanding of the task that it needs to perform.
Oh, good. So Terminators. Awesome. We're getting closer to Skynet. That's what we're always
Google robots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. I was going to say, this is what makes the Google robot scarier, Bob.
No, that walking alone. I have nightmares about – have you seen those sons of bitches, those Google robots?
Oh, yeah.
Walking? If that doesn't keep you up at night, worse than infomercials and caffeine, I don't know what – I mean, honest to God.
Well, having IT and the D on repeat 24 hours a day might do the trick.
That's good for insomnia, I heard. But, I mean, in terms of security world, what – I mean – does machine learning, I mean, is it replacing? Is it augmenting? Is it adding? Where does it fall into the I guess, the security aspect of this whole thing?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, the evolution is I went back and looked for the earliest research I could find on applying artificial intelligence, or let's refer to it as machine learning. And in 2002 was the first research paper I've been able to find that was applying machine learning to network security. And so it's been on the radar screen for a very, very long time. But what we're finding in the last year or so is that the algorithms have finally evolved to a point, and more importantly, there's a specialty type of CPU called a GPU, a graphical processor unit. Mm-hmm. So what those processors are really, really good at is doing pattern recognition. So if you go out to YouTube and you're looking for machine learning, you'll find some great, great videos explaining how machine learning is being used by Google to do pattern recognition, to identify what's in a photograph. You know, and they do some examples of how does Google tell in a photograph whether it's taken it day or night? Or how do we identify a panda, and how is a panda different than a black bear, or different than a big black and white dog?
Well, and even on a more simplistic, rudimentary level, I mean, so it's, you know, how do you identify whether it's at a personal setting at home or a corporate setting at the office? Like, how do I know that my kid or my employee is going to a breast cancer awareness site versus a porn site? You know, I mean, like things like that when it comes to like firewalls and
oh,
and,
Dave,
and,
speaking of which, I went to, you know, we went to the House of Hardcore wrestling show in Philly.
Yeah.
Don't go to the .com.
I'm going to go there right now.
I made that mistake today. I made that mistake today from my phone, which is on my corporate VPN. Yeah. Again, though, you make a great point. Go ahead.
But no, so, from a simplistic view for those out there, I mean, even that comes down to machine learning, you know, getting to understand, you know, because, I mean, you see the automated responses that go, mm-hmm. hey, this is, you know, filtered. If you think it's miscategorized, you know, click here, da 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 da. So, I mean, even that, you know, it's not fully autonomous learning. Some of it is training via feedback as well.
Well, you know, yeah, and in technical terms, there are multiple kinds of machine learning.
Yeah.
What you just brought up is supervised versus unsupervised
yep.
learning. So in the case of supervised learning, you would have an analyst providing feedback and labels to help the machine understand what it's looking at. So unsupervised learning might be looking for anomalies. It's one of the ways that they've made radical improvements on how to improve the analysis of the genome. So you could feed data in of a number of photographs and find a pattern. And so once you find a pattern in commonality, machine learning is very good at showing what the anomalies are in those patterns.
Well, I feel like machine learning is important because you have all this data, right? I mean, big data is a thing, and basically we're collecting data on everything. But a human can't sit there and look through all of it and come up with those patterns themselves.
Oh, sure. I mean, let's say you had 1 million photographs. And the task was to
– Nickelback was playing in the background saying, look at this
and
photograph.
And the lights were off. And you went to the wrong website earlier, House of Hardcore. I'm never getting any work done.
Yeah. So, you know, let's conceptualize that we have 1 million photographs and you've got one person who's responsible for identifying whether those photographs are taken at night or during the day, a very simple task.
Right.
But – if you have a machine that's specifically programmed to look at the time of day stamp within that file, to look at the hues and tones, to take other patterns out, you know, you could do that in a couple of days where
a human can't filter on EXIF information without digging into it and opening it up. And then, but no, very true.
No, I mean, being a network guy, so where does this all sit? Is this sitting in the core? Is this sitting on the edge? Where does – I mean, or is it like
– It depends on where you need it.
Or is it around us? Like,
well, you know
– You're soaking in it.
As we apply, and if you look at the venture capital that's going into this, the early products that are on the market today, you've got products like Deep Instinct or Cylance that are taking two decidedly different approaches to endpoint or PC or Macintosh security. You've got other companies like Darktrace or Vectra Networks that are taking an approach of identifying anomalous behaviors or anomalous flows that are happening on the network. You've got other companies like Panopticon that are doing it at the application level.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got others that are studying and providing learning and alerts based on user behavior. So those are the areas that we're seeing first come to the market, and now we're seeing some that are coming out to do machine learning for security and cloud-based apps. So the really fabulous thing that we see is that the venture capitalists are taking a lot different look at this kind of technology, building consortiums. And it's not just me saying that this is going to be the biggest thing to hit the planet since, ever. For information security, there's a lot of money going into this. There are predictions that in 2020 that we're going to need 2 million security analysts just to handle security.
Well, if you look at there was an article that we skimmed over in segment one, but it was talking about they did an interview with like 600 CIOs in Fortune top 600, 700 companies. And so where do you see the cloud going? Who's the major players and who's dying? Who's going to die?
Yep.
And they basically threw out AWS, Amazon, Azure, and Cisco as the top players. And the ones that are going to die are the Oracles, the IBMs, the old big iron. And I could see, like, when you have AWS, when you have this public cloud consumption modeled, you know, hosting service, that security has to be a grave concern, right? Is this coming about because what's out today isn't taking care of it?
Like, you know, it's an equalizing factor. It seems that organizations are always on the defense, and we've operated from the standpoint that, you know, gee, they're always going to find a way in. And that's because as a security analyst, if I'm sitting at my desk and I get an alert and it says you may have a security breach or you may have a password breach, I've got to respond to that, but there's just tons of information available to me. How do I sort through that? Sometimes the information's conflictual. Sometimes there are missing links. So if you have a tool like machine learning to apply to that, you're making the security analyst just orders of magnitude more effective.
Could you give me a really cool example? You mentioned user behaviors, and that picked up on something in the back of my head. What's an example of using machine learning to kind of predict bad user behaviors or something anomalous? Where can we use that?
Well, very, very simple.
So we know the second week in March, block all sports websites.
Nuri's shopping for maternity clothes online. Something obviously is wrong.
Oh, that hit a little too have, H- have HR contact him regarding health insurance plan updates.
Exactly. You know, when you look at the kind of information, the health of an individual or the sequence of flows that would help a retailer predict, you know, it's no secret. Walmart uses predictive analytics to determine if I put a particular display at the front door with great level of accuracy, they can determine how many people are going to stop and look, how many people are going to turn left, how many people are going to turn right. That's using this kind of predictive analytics based on the data and the observations that they've made in the past.
Well,
so,
and
you can apply, you know, that same kind of direction to network behavior.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it, you know, yeah, you know what? It's abnormal for Nuri to be logging in via VPN, trying to get access to those servers at 3 a.m. on a Sunday.
Or Nuri just logged into VPN from Michigan and his badge scanned in Bellingham, Washington.
Right.
Or something like that, right?
Well, you know, about a year ago, I was driving over to Massachusetts going through Canada.
Oh, sorry.
And, yeah, well, it happens. So,
I'm sorry. Well, quick, he's becoming Canadian.
No, I'm in Massachusetts. Oh, there's a reason why we call them massholes.
That's the worst drivers in the world. It's true.
Well, you know, we left at 2 a.m., and around 7, 8, 9 a.m., I'm pulling into McDonald's in Albany, and my credit card gets refused. And so I called up, what's going on? They said, well, you shouldn't be there yet because they use,
uh-huh.
The credit cards are using machine learning to make determinations on credit card usage. So using that example.
And now we're calling your insurance agent, letting them know what a jerk driver you are. And then
we're calling Hertz to let them know that their rental car just went over into Canada.
Right.
So same kind of analogy. If John logs out of his computer every day at 5.05 p.m. and we know that it's 35 minutes to get home, but in 15 minutes John is logging in from home, but we also know that typically John's phone is checking the email server
right.
periodically from an AT&T network, but about 5 minutes before John typically logs in from home, John's also switching to a Comcast address rather than the AT&T uh-huh. digital network, then the red flags start going off going, gee, that's curious. How did that happen?
Well, and for, I mean, there's always – and this is always my thing. I mean, there's always a downside to it because, I mean, it's fascinating technology. But like – so like Bank of America annoys the ever-living crap out of me. And this happens at least once every 2 months. And they're getting a little better about it now. But so the first one was about maybe like 8 months ago or so. You know, we're out on SoundCloud. We've got a pro account. They're based out of Berlin. That membership renewed the same day that, because at the time, or it got, maybe a year ago, I was still playing with LinkedIn Premium. And my LinkedIn Premium thing hit from Mountain View, California. And then I guess that happened as I was driving down the street to the gas station on the corner on my way into work. And I stopped to fill up with gas and my card gets declined. And I was like, eh, you know, and then I got a text alert going off and I got an email, you know, weird activity detected, da-da-da-da-da-da. Eh, really? It's not like my card was swiped in Berlin. It's not like my card was swiped in Mountain View, California. Bank of America, you ought to know enough about me by now to know that I shop online and I buy crap all over the place. Eh. So, I mean, like, I mean, minor inconvenience, but hashtag first world problems. Still, and now they've got it down to where, like, it's a text alert and you can, like, just reply, yeah, those three charges are me, shut up, and everything is good right away again. But, I mean, that's, I guess, that to me, like, that's the downside of it is the false positives and how that gets managed more than anything else.
Well, we're making the assumption that Bank of America is actually using machine learning in order to make those determinations. They may not.
I would hope so. I would hope it's not just some random crap.
Well, they're still a bank.
Yeah, true. Hey, yeah, not exactly bleeding edge technology. Let's be realistic.
Not exactly having your convenience as their first concern.
Right.
No, it was bad at one point with the banks because I'd have to call the bank when I traveled internationally just to say, don't shut my shit off.
I'm going to Japan.
Right. What am I supposed to do if I don't have any money? You turn off my two credit cards, you know? So, yeah. But I think now, obviously, I think technology's changed enough where they're, you know, not getting hit.
They're starting to catch on a little bit. So talk to me, you know, from a more, you know, we got into the professional world of things on a personal level, you know, the day-to-day user. How does this impact things, you know, like whether it's online gaming or, you know, the games we all have on our cell phones? Like, does that fall into this realm as well? Or?
Oh, sure. You know, I think I mentioned Panopticon. Panopticon's a great little company down in Columbus, Ohio. You know, hooray Midwest. And they are working with the gaming industry, the video gaming industry, to look at people who might be abusing acceptable use policy.
So. Well, and I think I'm sure you saw it today too, and I know it was a trending thing on Facebook. If you logged into whether it's Clash of Clans or Boom Beach or anything like that, any game by FreeCell that you logged into today basically had a, hey, by the way, you know, like a mandatory notice that popped up that basically we're keeping an eye on you. Mm-hmm. You know, and if
we put any third party,
yeah,
APIs
if we figure out they're using, you know, a bot or anything like that, yeah, we're going to ban you and na-na-na-na. So, I mean, it's obvious. And well, back in the Mafia Wars days, that was a big thing with scripts and bots and all that stuff.
Did you actually script that stuff?
Oh, dude, I had every script known to mankind.
I toiled away mining Thai bot for years. And I could have been scripting it.
I had five different profiles in every bot known to mankind running 24/7. But yeah,
Supercell just sent a thing out about that for Clash of Clans and all the other.
Welcome to the conversation, Jared.
That's what I was just saying. That's what I was just saying. But what's funny, and I thought this was interesting, is even like I got it on my Android device, but their press release basically said they were specifically targeting iOS users. Like, and I don't know if that's because maybe iOS users are a bigger base for them or if the vast majority of exploits are out there for the iOS platform.
Sure. There are certain analytics they're using to do that. It may be that, you know, their chief programmer's best at doing iOS programming.
Yeah.
You don't know. But, you know, from the standpoint that if the integrity of the video game manufacturers is such that if people are using bots, it dispels the integrity of the game.
It's no different than glitching on like Battlefield or, you know, Call of Duty and things like that. The one guy that can, you know, knows how to game the system so ruins the experience.
But, you know, one of the things that we're starting to see, and we have an informal working relationship because we're doing machine learning at the network level. So to combine this, and this has great application, we believe, for connected car and other Internet of Things connected devices. But, you know, from the standpoint that they're coming to us and they're starting to get a lot of attention from the online gambling sites, mm-hmm, where the stakes are much larger, where they're starting to see some isolated cases, but it obviously can grow. Where near the end of a betting period, let's say the odds are going to shift because Mr. Brady breaks his ankle the day before. Well, you know what? If somebody can do a denial of service attack against all the other gamblers and that fits their position, well, there's big money in it to fit their advantage. So, you know, there are legitimate concerns about how people can use information in the network or, you know, some of the gamers, they're starting to see that as they're getting close to some of the more competitive games, they'll do a DDoS attack against the IP addresses of their competitors, locking them out of the game. Therefore, they win by default.
Whatever happened to yelling bad words at them?
You know? There you go.
That's what it used to be. You going to hang on for segment four?
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
How do we find you online?
A couple of ways. iWorksTech.com. We've got an exciting blog that is really inspired by its message by what happens here at IT and the D. That's IW.
One of the better corporate blogs I've read, by the way.
Thank you. iworksTech.com. I think we'll be in the pod notes here.
Oh, yeah.
And you can also find me personally, and I'll if you mention IT and the D, I'll be more than happy to accept your link on LinkedIn, Caston Thomas. CASTON. I'll let you figure out the Thomas.
Cool. always good conversation, Caston. Appreciate you hanging out with us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with none other than Dr. Hook himself, live in the flesh here. Jeremiah from Daily Detroit and segment three. This is the IT and the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT in the D Show.
ITintheD.com. This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome back. This is segment 3, episode 140 of the IT in the D Show. We're broadcasting here live. Podcast Detroit, beautiful Ferndale, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy, always here with Dave the Geek. Nuri the FNG is in the house to find everything you need to know about us. ITintheD.com. And we are joined by none other than one of the originators here at IT in the D, been with us through thick and thin, big supporter of the show as we are of his. Dr. Hook Jeremiah is here from Daily Detroit. How you do?
Good. How you doing, sir?
Good. So you heard
We're sangry.
Sangry?
We're sad angry. And angry.
Sangry?
Yes.
I thought maybe you were mispronouncing sanguine.
Or sangria.
Either one option.
The official drink of sangria.
So we went to Philly this weekend and had an outstanding time. And part of the reason why we had an outstanding time was what makes us sad and angry that Detroit doesn't have or isn't. Every single little neighborhood that first off, let's talk about wandering around downtown from 5 p.m. till 3 a.m.
Right.
You were in the dark in Philly wandering around?
Oh, yeah. South Philly. Mm-hmm. Dude, we were
yeah, like South Detroit.
Yeah, no, we weren't in Wyandotte. Yeah,
and
no.
I kept
or Windsor,
and it wasn't West Philadelphia, born and raised.
Oh, no. You stole my.
Oh
head.
Man, I've been thinking about how to use that for like 20 minutes now.
Yeah, no, it was South Philly. We were you know, which is the equivalent of is Southie in Boston. I mean, wow. Yeah. So South Philly, and we're wandering around 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. No issues. Every neighborhood has its own bar, at least one. Its own convenience store, its own like you know a couple of businesses,
cheesesteak place,
everything. It was all the people we ran into and talked to,
just
even
the pulse,
even
everywhere.
If Bob doesn't remember that we talked and met, that we met and talked with people, just the phenomenal times we had, and that's not Detroit. And it should be like, dude, you walk, you know, we did the, you know, stereotypical touristy crap. We went to the Philly Museum of Art, you know, did the thing, you know, we went up the Rocky Steps. Some of us may have taken longer than others, but we'll just leave that up to the imagination. Went up the right. But like, so you get to the top of the Rocky Steps and you look out over the city. Dude, it's Woodward. Like it's looking up what Woodward Avenue should be. It's, you know, there's the Campus Martius area right in front of you. There's the wide lane thoroughfare going right up the heart of the city with all of the bars and restaurants and business. And that's just that one core area. Then you go off into the neighborhoods. You know, I don't care where, like everything. Every bar we went to was 0.2 miles mm-hmm. away because it was that's. Two blocks over. So like every bar we went to was 0.2 miles, and it was amazing.
It was like if you put Royal Oak, Birmingham, Berkeley, Ferndale, Detroit.
Oh, St. Clair Shores. Because there's waterfront.
And you mushed them all together like within, you know, 10 square miles.
Well, I mean, that travel's great for giving perspective like that. It really is. And I think more people should do it because I think taking those kind of ideas and bringing them here are really key. One of the things we reran today was about how like, –
Five best hamburgers?
Five ways Detroit is not the new Brooklyn.
True.
And looking at the data and being very objective about it. And if you want to get the density of Brooklyn, you've got to shove all of Oakland and I think it's basically keep all the people in Detroit, then shove in all the people in Oakland County, then shove in a good portion of people in Macomb County, and then cut it in 2/3.
Yeah.
And that's how you get like the it's not even comparison.
Yeah.
I think
– Well, that's one of Detroit's biggest challenges is sprawl.
Totally. Totally. And it's also the culture where it's not just sprawl, but we don't have the connections that bring us together. We have so many times where it's like, oh, I'm on the east side. I'm not going to go see you in Dearborn. Or, oh, I mean, I can't tell you how many people when I've done interviews or been out there where it's like I live in Southfield, but I don't even go to Royal Oak. And it's like, come on, man.
There was such a pulse downtown. Dave's like, the Flyers playing tonight? You know, because that's what we're used to.
Yeah, because the game, if I was out on Friday night, it was not a game night, dead everywhere downtown.
Yeah, no, and you walk in every bar. I mean, yeah, they've got, but no, the Flyers weren't playing. You know, the Phillies aren't doing anything.
We went to dive bars. I'm talking seedy, underbelly.
By the way, I feel like I have to do this. Nice thank you shout out to the folks on Philadelphia Yelp. I had told a couple of you had asked where we, and I gave you the links to the blog and the podcast and everything. If you're listening, immense thank you for all the tips about where to go. We wound up at places named Dirty Frank's.
Who was the guy that owned the Happy Birthday Bar?
Ray's Happy Birthday Bar.
Ray's Happy Birthday Bar. And how do you not have fun at a place like that?
Oh, where we went and
Every day a birthday?
Every day is a birthday. You get free drinks on your birthday. We went and took over the karaoke bar. We'll go figure. And we went to McGlinchey's, the oldest pub in Philly.
From 1860.
Yeah, continuous operation, you know, from 1860. Somebody just phenomenal
places. Bob and Barbara's, which was a PBR-themed bar.
And who didn't have his jacket?
I didn't wear my sport
coat. Oh, my gosh. That's the fail
literally
of the trip, Bob.
Floor to ceiling, every single wall was PBR paraphernalia, promotional items, employee badges. It was just, they put a lot of work into making that the PBR bar.
Well, it's smart to create a niche like that. And you can do that when you've got a lot of people in a dense area and you have a lot of competition. You got to do something like that.
Those bars exist here. There's not all within walking. They're not all within, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few starting to now. Like only the last couple of years, you've got a situation where you go, say, to the Keep, to Greenwich Time, to Checker, to Central. But, like, there's not that many places like that. There's that. There's Corktown. There's a couple other places you can do that. But not in that same kind of, like, where you've got 10 or 15 or 20. And, yeah, they talk about all the lists of all the numbers of bars in the city now or something.
They're all isolated.
They're isolated. Well, there's the connecting tissue. There needs to be the connecting tissue as far as walkability, as far as transit, because who wants – you should not be getting hammered and driving.
Well, and not only that, but you don't necessarily want to, you know, go staggering out a two-way in – and go walking around that neighborhood.
I love the 2 a.m., by the way.
Well, and so do we.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you don't necessarily want to, you know, I mean, but that's reality.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, like, granted, some of it might have just been, you know, drunken superpower invincibility. But, like, random people on the street were, like, just open and friendly and it was just phenomenal.
Well, I think that's part of creating a 24/7 city. I don't think there's that much of that in this region. This whole region does not have much 24/7-ness whatsoever.
Have you ever heard of the Reading Terminal? Have you ever seen like from Food Network
it's
and all
Reading,
that?
It's Reading, by the way.
Reading just, Terminal?
Yeah,
it's Reading.
Yeah. I've heard of the Reading Terminal.
I mean Reading.
It's not Reading Rainbow.
No, I'm thinking of Monopoly.
Yeah. That's also Reading Railroad.
It's basically like it's a flea market in downtown. If the flea market, every single shop was high-end, like charcuterie, butchers, sandwich places, fish markets, Chinese, any kind of food you wanted, sweets, ice cream, like lunch counters for cheesesteak places. It was like Mark walks around. He says, I feel like I'm in the middle of a movie. I've never seen anything like this before. It's the most amazing thing I've ever been to. It doesn't exist.
Literally, you could go there every
– of it comparatively. Like we've got the Gratiot Market, which is really cool, the Gratiot Meat Market across from Eastern Market.
We have
samples, but we don't have that same kind of like super density. It's
picture
just not
if like Shed 5 in Eastern Market was just packed with businesses 24/7. Well, not 24/7 because they closed at 5 on Friday.
I know, stupid.
But just packed with businesses. I mean, that's
open on more days than say Tuesday and Saturday.
Right. I mean, and that's what it was. Like literally, I mean, we're sitting there mowing down on yet another sandwich. It was like my God, we could come here every day
for months
and mm-hmm. and not have the same thing twice.
For sure.
You know, and yeah, breakfast joints and lunch joints, you know, Chinese and deli. I mean, and I think Mark, you know, that was one of the things. You know, if you put that in Detroit, like the Dimmick's, the
roasted pork place,
yeah, the sub joint. They were sitting there. You know, it's an open counter. You know, there are bar stools. You know, right in the walkway and that kind of stuff.
There's lots of proof though. If something's good and people open it, it does well. I mean, there's tons of places that are doing that, but people, they get in their mind that they can't or that it can't happen here, and so they don't do it. So and so it tends to like hold things up a little bit, right?
See, and that's where we landed, was the issue is the people. Because and that's where I was going with that. So, you know, Demix, you're sitting there at a lunch counter, you know, on the little red leather bar stools, and you're swiveling
like
around and that kind of stuff.
I felt like Kresge as a kid.
Yeah, you know, and you're sitting there in the middle of this, you know, and you got hundreds of people walking
people
by every way.
Places like Wright & Company or Peterborough or whatever, but they open, they go, and they do it, and they're making money, and they make it happen, right?
But you put – and I think Mark said it best. You put that in Eastern Market or somewhere downtown, and it's maybe it's a mindset thing. It's 2 weeks before someone gets bumped into sitting at the counter, and there's a fight, there's a brawl, there's a stabbing, there's a shooting, there's something like that.
I don't think there's a brawl. I mean,
and it becomes a thing.
Well, when you talk about the 7.2, I don't think that that's the case as much. Like, you know, in the downtown, in the 7.2 greater downtown area, I don't think that's as much of the story.
Yeah, true.
You know, I think it's not necessarily the physical stuff. It's the mental block. It's the mental block people have. You know, as somebody who's been around, lived in this, you know, lived, been around, worked in the city probably now, geez, close to 20 years. That's what it is. It's not that it's that. I mean, yes, bad things happen and that sucks. But for the most part, it's all about, you know, the mindset and putting yourself out there. If you live in a city, bad things can happen anywhere in a city. It's about what happened, like how you treat things and what you do and how you approach a situation. And I mean, bad things happen in Philadelphia. Bad things – Chicago, even though its crime rate is going through the roof, nobody says, well, I'm not visiting Chicago.
Well, but and honestly, like that's the part that made us laugh is like at one point in time, you know, it's – I don't know, like 1:30 a.m. and we're going to, you know, bar 8 or wherever it was. And I'm like, dude, how many times do you hear Philadelphia and people shit all over Philadelphia as, you know, a terrible city and a horrible city and yet – and I'm like – we're sitting here having the time of our lives. The hell?
No, I mean, we have it here too. It's just – it's so – like if we would go to like Jacoby's, we do the pub crawls all the time. Nancy Whiskey's, to Batch Brewing.
But you need a bus to do the bar crawl or you're driving between.
See, and that's – like I told my friends –
there's life. There was life. There's not life here.
Well, and I've told my friends back east.
It's street life.
Ever since I moved out here, my friends that are still back east, whether it's D.C. or Boston, I've told them, you know, like, God, why Detroit? I'm like, no, you got to understand, like, all the cool stuff that you're used to is here. You're just going to have to drive to get to it.
And that's across the whole region. Yeah.
And I do. I mean, I think that's the big issue is, you know, and we've seen it, whether, you know, it's after a pink slip party or, you know, any other event that we do downtown or just, you know, wandering around downtown. You know, God, we walk out of, you know, Kevin Smith a couple weeks ago, State closed.
Pub Rub closed.
Everything was closed.
At 10 o'clock at night. The hell? How do you have
Was it a Thursday night?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Thursday night.
How do you
have
a downtown district where everything's locked up?
And yeah, there are places that are open for sure, but they're far and few between and they're not in a way that people are used to who travel or that want to have fun. And that momentum stoppage happens all over the region, whether you're, you know, east, west, you know, going up to Birmingham, whatever, where it's like there's nowhere to continue it forward. And so there's a lot of money that gets left on the table.
Hey, having a great time. And I'm done. Closed. Yeah.
String of momentum, right? So we left the theater and if nothing's open, what do you do?
We would have gone to the State Bar and we probably would have each dropped a good amount of
cheddar. Yep.
Yeah. Good amount of cheddar. It's a great, cool looking bar. It's a total missed opportunity and don't even know why they weren't open.
You're like, well, what's open around here? Nothing. Where do we have to go? Oh, we have to drive down the street. Never mind. I'm going home. Right, that's what I think your average person does.
Yeah,
you don't. The string of momentum is what you're basing.
Yeah, and it's got to be visible. It's got to be easy for people. It's got to be welcoming.
With an eye shot, you're like, oh crap, that looks awesome. Let's walk over to that. Right.
These are basic urbanist principles.
Yes.
Very basic that every other city seemed to figure it out, and we should take a few of those cues too, because I think that's how we're going to help take the life up to the next level, not just downtown, but in all different areas of the region where that if you want to keep young people, not everyone's going to move in the city. Not everybody's going to – whatever. That's fine. But like if you want to have people stay here and have good talent stay here, that's part of the whole
– Well, no. I wouldn't live in downtown Philly either. You know, it's like I've said. When I was young and stupid and single, living in downtown D.C. was frigging phenomenal.
Well, they got those two or three level houses where it's like
the brownstones, yeah.
Sidewalk street, like you've seen Rocky where they're on top.
They're row houses, yeah.
Right. And you just drive down street and there's like 100 of them. And you just
per block, yeah.
Right. And they're all full. And like, A, where do you park? But B, no wonder why there's life on the streets. It's because everybody wants to get the hell out of these houses.
Yeah, and I want to listen to my neighbor's bitch.
Right.
Well, I think some of that idea is part of why they're doing things like the micro apartments now, where the old strip club was that they demolished, is so that there's that idea of a third space where the pub is kind of like your secondary living room, or you've got work, you've got home, and then you've got a third space where you meet and interact with people. And there was a time Detroit was really good at the third space. We had so many saloons per capita. It was – I mean, I can't remember the number off the top. And then freeways and, you know, and cars to the max and sprawl the max and policies that pushed people out.
Mass transit everywhere. And not like a stupid little line that's going to go four blocks. I mean, like subways running everywhere, like every time and cabs everywhere, and we had a little issue with Uber and their surge there too, but just
how big was the surge?
3-2
Yeah, what was it on 10:30 on a Sunday morning when we were looking to start thinking we had to the airport?
It was 2.
Yeah, a 2x surge with like 8 Ubers right around us.
That's kind of like the walk of shame surge, I think, is what that is.
That could have been. Yeah, that could have been. But no, so, I mean, like that's the thing. And I mean, it's just it was like a kick in the gut.
But let's think about some of the policies that get us there. So we think about cities like Ferndale, right? And how long they've debated going back and forth around having more dense apartments and building taller. Yeah. And Ferndale is the kind of place that could easily be an urban mini center in a way, you know, that has a lot of, you know, medium density things like that. Decent, crime rates are not a problem there to any, you know, like there's so many things that are good for Ferndale, right? If you were to tie that together with like a downtown with a bus rapid transit or a streetcar, that would be killer. But then how long have they debated that apartment building that maybe now is only starting to get going?
Uh-huh.
And how long – like we have this identity crisis where we want to do – we want to get big but we don't want to get too big. Or we want development but we don't want all the development.
But you can't make it too nice because then rent will go up, and then what about the people that were – you know. That's the dumbest argument.
But we're wrestling with these things when in reality our region has not grown in 50 years. Uh-huh. We've sprawled. People forget this. It is not that, you know, people left the city and then the suburbs blossomed. It's with tons of people. It's that basically everyone just shifted and they just keep shifting. We're not adding to the total pie. What we need to do is add to the pie, and that's when we're going to really start making – I mean, you look at the data with Chicago. In the same amount of time, they've almost doubled.
Yep.
You know? Well, and so they've sprawled, but they've also added people. Here, we're just shifting the chairs around and then throwing them out to 29,000-mile road.
Yep.
Well, you look at Nuri, who just sold a house in Pleasant Ridge.
They're trying to sell a house in Pleasant Ridge.
Oh, I thought you were – I'm sorry.
Well, is the Ridge Pleasant?
You want to move to Detroit.
Totally. Right? And I'm so pissed off because three houses are now come and gone. Like, I'd like to make an offer on this house. Oh, you can't because they accepted an offer about an hour ago. And I'm like, damn it, the house
is in the middle
of one day.
We're in the middle of doing a long feature on an in-depth data feature, which is one of the things we love to do. And the markets are starting to heat up outside of downtown for sure. I mean, there are certain neighborhoods that are going crazy.
What was it? 3,200 square feet, 5 bedrooms for $250,000?
That's it.
Are you kidding me?
University district, yeah.
The era of the $100 house really didn't really exist in the first place, but it's definitely
– you still have like $20,000 and $30,000 houses out there. I mean, it's still very attainable, but
yeah.
In the university district or any of these nice districts, you're not going to find those things. But I'm going to keep looking. I'm not discouraged because I'm moving to Detroit.
Good.
Well, hey, we're going to take a quick break, Jared. We'll be back with you. We'll be back with Kasten. This is the IT in the D show, and we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, guys, it's Timog, Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon. You're listening to the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome back. Segment 4. This is episode 140 of the number one ranked technology podcast on SoundCloud this week. This is the IT in the D Show, and we are broadcasting live here in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Ferndale, Michigan. This is Bob, the sales guy, here with Captain Soundboard Dave the Geek, Nuri the FNG, Kasten from Interworks, and Dr. Hook from Daily Detroit. Find us online, itinthed.com. Last reminder, don't forget to mark your calendars. bunch of events going on April 21st, this Thursday. We're going to be at the Blackfin in Royal Oak for a casual IT networking event.
No cover, no nonsense, no agendas, no BS. Just show up, grab a drink, and meet good people.
May the 5th is the inaugural Metro Detroit podcaster meetup downstairs at Activate Gaming. We're going to have some beer and some
booze
and some video games.
And some mayonnaise.
And for Cinco de Mayo, it's going to be in the sink. I will bring the Miracle Whip.
Whip. And then this Sunday, we're going to be over at Detroit Pub for the Detroit Music Unite thing that's going on, talking with folks that are going to be want to do podcasts there. And then PenguinCon, end of the month, is where all of the fun's going
to
happen.
10 days to PenguinCon. I am absolutely freaking out at this point.
Yeah, it's a little crazy that's happening that quickly. And
yeah, not this weekend, next weekend. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's going to be nuts.
And then Motor City Comic Con shortly thereafter. Should be fun. So I guess, you know what, let's dive back where we left off. You know, we talked about, our adventures roaming around Philly and what we saw and, what was good and what we think should be good. You know, definitely could be better here. The common maybe it's mindset, but what we came down to is it's the people that keeps it from being like that here, whether it's the institutional mentality, whether it's the politicians that the names at the top might change. But
I'm hesitant to say people and put people in the giant bucket, but I think it is. To me, it's the mindset. It's the
And when I say people, let's get this. Yeah, when I say people, I mean everybody. Whether it's in the city, in the suburbs, it's that us versus them mentality.
We need to get rid of Detroit. I mean, this is gonna. The homers aren't going to like this, but we need to get rid of Detroit versus everybody, and it needs to definitely be much more about Detroit with everybody and working with everybody.
And stop walking around with little pitch counters. trying to make sure – let's stop that too.
It's not a kid's book, right? The city's not – when you open – a brewery downtown, it's not supposed to be a kid's book. Let's count the ethnicities of everyone here, and if it's not up to my standards, I'm going to complain, write a shitty clickbait blog. Not you, Jeremiah, but other people in town. But again, can't we just...
You just told me I couldn't go there.
No, you just told me. I got light. I grazed... Because I know you. I grazed the surface. I just touched, and that's all I was going to go. You were going to get... Right. You were going to go into the bowels of that thing, and that's when I was like, no, Dave. Stop it. But seriously, we all got to work together. Everyone's got to work together. I don't care if you live in St. Clair Shores or Livonia or where you live.
Well, and it ties into something that you guys talk about all the time with IT and the D and your networking events and everything else, right? I firmly believe that the comeback of the Detroit region starts with a job. Yeah. And if we can get – if you've got people employed, they don't have the motivations to go do crime. I don't believe that people want to be in the position that they want to – that they're in right now. If given the opportunity and I'm not a big fan of a handout, but I'm a big fan of a hand up. That's why I think that things like transit are important. People forget in the Motor City, more than a quarter of people – quarter of households don't even own a car.
Chair, we talk
that's
about
– that's crazy, right?
That's the first thing when Neri said about buying a house out here. It's hard to own a car in the city of Detroit. And he got insurance for $300 a month. Yours is more.
For a $12,000 Audi, that's the value of my car is $12,000. That's $300 a month. But what about a brand new something that may cost $25,000 or
$30,000? I'm
not spending that on two cars.
Right. No, but my grandparents have like a whole fleet of cars less than that.
Let's take this down from the place that we're at where there's so much – ability to do that to the majority of the people that I'm talking about, they don't have any money. They're working, at close to minimum wage, a little bit above it. Yeah. There's no way they can, That's who it really hurts.
Yeah.
We are in a privileged place to be able to complain about it on a podcast. To these folks, it's like, all right, I have to take the bus every day because I'm stuck here. And that's a really, really crappy life. And that's not okay. And we have to change that in a lot of ways for that. And we need to – that's what we need to push the conversation forward on, that it's not – transit shouldn't be about a hipster train. It's about opportunity. And how do we get opportunity for all of Detroit, not just opportunity Detroit, but opportunity for all of Detroit? How do we change that conversation?
Well, and I guess that's the thing. I mean, you look at, you know, all the conversations that, you know, go on about, you know, yeah, it's great in, you know, around Hockey Town and Midtown and that kind of stuff, you know, but what about the neighborhoods and what about the neighborhoods and what about the neighborhoods? So, okay, great. My follow-up question is, well, what about the neighborhoods? Like
what do you want?
Yeah, what do you want? Like what would?
Well, that comes down to that's the thing, right? In order to accomplish something, you have to set a goal, and you have to find a way. And it would be great to see some strategic planning happening around those neighborhoods. And yeah, they had the Detroit framework a few years ago, but it was so general that it was just kind of like a book that ended up, frankly, for the most part, seems to be on a shelf.
But Jared, say take the conversation and peel it off to anywhere, any place. Okay, they're building the
palace. What about South Warren? I mean, no. Warren has an issue. You know,
could you imagine me going, hey, they're building in the new Chrysler headquarters. It's going to take up a whole city block. Then I'm going to sit here and go, what about my neighborhood? You would laugh. You would fall over. You would poop your pants laughing.
Well, I think part of it is that it's not about – this is where we get into like some of the more stickier wickets. But like – in a lot of ways, it's not about the physical. It's about the psychological. It's the fact that a lot of people feel like that they're not being heard in the conversation that's happening around Detroit. And to some degree, I understand where they're coming from. I really do.
But isn't some of that – and this has been – this is the part that really just grinds at me. Isn't that just the practical reality of growth and turnaround? Like I get it. Growth, change, and turnaround have impacts on people. They do. You know, when – you know, you look at our friend Natasha out in Brooklyn. You know, she's been out there for, you know, 10 years. She loves where she lives, yada, yada. But rents keep going up and she's moving out of Brooklyn because, you know, Brooklyn's going through a revitalization and everything's growing and na-na-na-na. It is what it is. We hear that same thing in Detroit. There's revitalization. There's this. There's that. But I can't afford my apartment anymore. I can't afford to. That happens. Like that's just a practical reality of life.
Well, I think we've blended together two conversations. One, the general conversations blend together two things. One about the monetary, and one about inclusion and who owns what and who is part of the leadership pie, right? And those two things have been blended together here in Detroit. You know, it's something where. There is a large.
You know who owns it? Who owns it? That's who owns it. You own your house. You own your neighborhood. We talked about this. Mm-hmm. You know, when there were abandoned house. You know, there's an abandoned house in my neighborhood. You know what happened? A couple of us got together. We mowed the grass. We made sure it got kept up.
Dude, my neighborhood was garbage because the building went bankrupt. Same thing
for sure. But I mean, part of it too is about leveling the playing field of opportunity where you can. There are systemic things that make it harder for minority entrepreneurs and others to get loans, all those kind of things. Those are real things. We need to we need to constantly have as part of the conversation inclusion so that we can move forward in the best way.
But those don't just exist here.
No, they don't just exist here. But
like that's not a Detroit problem.
But we could do a better job because I think of being inclusive. Okay, we could do a better job around that, but that doesn't mean the whole train has to stop, you know? And so that's where it is. It's like it seems to be like to so many it's an either-or conversation. It shouldn't be an either-or conversation because that's not how cities are. And the other thing is that cities are constantly changing. Yeah. No matter where – that is the nature of cities time immemorial. If you look under the streets of Rome, you've got layers and layers of cities buried underneath it because that's what cities do. Cities, of course, have a past. Cities, of course, have all these things. I mean going all the way back to 1701. And even before then, right?
Hey, you want to talk about who was here first? Meh.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a descendant of Chief Pontiac. So whenever I talk about it, they're like, I claim first. And I'm like, yes, you get to call first on the comment thread. Yes,
the Vikings
you do.
Are here before that. Let's get the Denmark people over here. No, I'm just kidding.
But it shouldn't be about first. It should be about respect. And that's what it needs to – that's the conversation. It needs to be about respect, inclusion, but also development, creating opportunities and jobs because that's key. And looking at things like education in a holistic manner where it's like, you know, you've got so many people who need to get from one place to another and that skills gap is huge and like not in the New York huge way, but in the ridiculously huge, scary way, which is unless we start to address that seriously, we're going to have trouble with a full turnaround. Because if you've got a group of people who aren't making it through high school, who aren't getting the basic skills they need to even get into community college, then what are we doing as a society? You know?
Yeah, we got principals taking kickbacks while the schools are falling down around us. That's what we've got.
Exactly. And that's not okay.
And then they blame it on a funding problem, and it's got nothing to do with funding.
Well, there was a study that came out. Well, there's a study that just came out on NPR site. They did a great infographic. And if you zoom into Detroit, you see Detroit's actually got more funding per pupil
than Grosse Pointe.
Than any almost anywhere else in the state.
Mm-hmm. 5,000 more people than Wyandotte.
But then we've got the debt service that's ridiculously high, which is, by the way, a debt to the state in many ways, you know, which controls the system, mm-hmm. you know, taking money out. So couldn't there be more creative solutions than what we're doing now? Couldn't we think outside of the box just like we need to around the downtown and the walkable areas? Couldn't we come up with a solution that puts kids first and not debt first? In the state, and Detroit's not the only district in this problem. There's all kinds of suburban districts that are in the shitter. Excuse my French. But, like, we need to do something about that, too. So we need to stop thinking about debt first and start thinking about kids first.
But I think I think a lot of the suburban cities have many of the same issues that Detroit has for one simple reason. They were all just happy-slappy to go ahead and grow – while the influx was happening and the growth and the tax bases were growing and yada yada.
And federal programs that push people to buy in those suburbs.
But then they refused to contract. When the opposite started, like when the city started shrinking Detroit, Warren, anywhere else, when those cities started shrinking, they didn't contract back.
It blows my mind that people talk about 696 as the new 8 Mile. Blows my mind. It just shows you how much of an impact sprawl has had.
That's hilarious.
But that's
they've been saying that since – I mean, I grew up in Warren. They've been saying that since I was in high school.
But there's a difference between like it's becoming more and more shown in the data. Like there was a recent Free Press thing article that was really good talking about the difference between north of 696 and south of 696. Instead of being a high school taunt, it's like real poverty.
But
like
Dave,
real
I went through
scary poverty.
Warren contracted because, I mean, me growing up, I graduated high school in 91.
Yeah.
I think I saw just around me 5 schools close between elementary, middle school, Warren High closing, merging into Cousino, Cromie closing, Melby closing. Oh, I mean, I went through at least –
there's a lot,
5 or 6.
But there's a lot of that that didn't happen, though. I mean, and it's not just schools. I mean, I'm talking about like, you know, police departments, fire departments, you know, city government workers and all that kind of stuff. Those all bloated up when things were going great. But then they didn't say, oh, you know what? We've got fewer residents. We need fewer cops. We need fewer firefighters. We need fewer this. And so now you're trying to maintain that same level of where you were when things were great, when you don't have that same level of income coming in. And that's region wide. That's not just a Detroit thing or you know, an east side, west side thing. That's – there's a lot of cities that have been that dumb.
Well, then – but this is something that would be anathema to a lot of people. But what about the idea of, okay, if the region's population doesn't grow, then let's put out a development border. Let's say, okay, you can't go past X or something like that. Because that's what's happening, right? What's happening is that there's new houses being built, all that other stuff, and it's over a 32-mile road. It keeps stretching infrastructure out farther and farther. You know, it always blows my mind when people – I'm all for people choosing where they want to live, but you know, don't move to the country and then complain you're 30 miles from the mire because you moved 30 miles from the mire.
Right.
You know, like you, I thought you moved out there to do that. And
yeah.
Like I totally respect the country life and that's awesome. And if I could, I'd be.
I'm actually glad they're out though because now I don't have to listen to them complain.
Well, but I mean, and that's, you know, but realistically, I mean, that's, you know, those are the same issues even inside the city borders. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, God, the city lost its mind when a Trader Joe's went in. The city lost its mind when a Meijer went in. Whole Foods, when a Meijer opened up downtown. I mean,
there's another Whole Foods coming in, another Meijer.
Did you hear? They're going to get a Panera.
It's open.
Ooh.
In the Renton.
There's another Whole Foods coming. Where?
That has been the talk for quite a while that the developers of the first Whole Foods are looking for spots for their second.
I would just love an actual grocery store to be somewhere in the city. I think all of the citizens of Detroit probably would too.
Well, I mean, the thing is though is that there are some really good ones, but you need to know where they are, and they're not going to be Kroger. There's some really good ones. They're like Honeybee La Camena is really good.
Right.
And that's, you know, you can try Harbor Town. You could do Lafayette Foods. You could do – I mean, I could keep going on those kind of things depending on what neighborhood. There's a lot of places where people go that are, but they're not going to be Kroger. They're not going to be Farmer – well, Farmer Jack doesn't exist anymore.
A&P. Bring A&P. Back A&P.
Right. Well, but, you know, and honestly, I mean, that's some of that mental block is, okay, you want to talk people – you want to talk people into moving back down into the city from the burbs. How are they going to do that if they don't know where they can go grocery shop? How are they going to do that if they don't know, you know, and some of that, it's yeah, I granted it's some of that, well, you know, you move to the city and, you know, you get, you know, but part assimilate, of it, but yeah, still.
But part of it, too, is then in some ways.
Got to get the bread and milk. Got to get the bread and milk.
Exactly.
Well, the key, though, part of it, too, is that when people move into the city, I think it's really important for folks to meet the folks in the neighborhood and get to know folks so that they can tell you, like, oh, if you're looking at a place here, then try this or do right. this. You know, that's part of that inclusion, I think, that inclusion process.
Or integration, even better, right? You're integrating into the neighborhood.
Right.
I had the best experience today. I actually was driving around the University District and I stopped and I saw a guy outside. He's getting out of his car, going to his house. I'm like, hey, what's it like to live here? What's it like in this neighborhood? Do you like living here? Tell me stories about the neighborhood. Just understanding where you live is such an important part of living somewhere.
Nuri, do you know how many people I've brought into my home that are just like creeping down the street at 3 miles an hour and I know they're looking at, you know, the new houses?
Dude, people love to talk about their neighborhoods.
Yeah,
right?
And then they roll the window down. And they said, hey, you know, can I ask you a question? I'll invite them in my house.
Come in for a beer. Yeah, sure, exactly. I'll tell you all about it.
Right.
And so good.
Well, I sold – I was joking I need realtor commission on 3 houses because I sold them. Like, seriously. Like, go tell your realtor I want a check. Like, I'm not being funny.
It's the Chamber of Bobbers.
Right. Sounds like some weird carnival game. I don't know if I like
that. You're on the zoning commission, Bob. It's part of your job.
Soon to be on the tax increment financial board.
Yeah, there was a social study done a number of years ago that talked about how society changed when the architecture of houses in suburbia moved from having front porches to back porches.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the isolation there. I mean, the opportunity, and no offense, guys, but I'm sitting here listening, and I kind of feel like I'm in a flashback to 2005. I hear the conversation centered around the same kind of issues in 2005.
That's the problem. And there's no change. Same in 95.
But if we acknowledge that, you know, the old adage, it's always darkest before it goes completely black.
You know? Yeah, because it's not darkest before dawn, idiots. It's
2005, we were down. What we need to acknowledge is that we've gone through some really hard times. And we're in a much better place than we are. Let's talk about the foundation that we've built. Let's talk about the accomplishments we've made. And that's going to change the mindset, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's build on what we have instead of just continuing to talk about the negativity. You know, we've got great things going on. We've got great people here. I mean, you know,
we absolutely do. But I mean, that, like, honestly, that's one of the other things that pisses me off. Like the random. I'm not for a random slam job. Like I don't like, you know, people that are purely negative, because I mean we do. We talk about all the great stuff in this area all the time. But I'm also not going to sit here and blow smoke up people's asses either. That's never going to happen.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, I hate the happy slappy, you know, everything's coming up roses. It's all great. Oh, hooray. Gilbert bought another building. He's our savior. Might as well be Jesus walking down Woodward in sandals and a robe. You know, that's not going to be us either. You know, so, I mean, it's – yeah, there's a lot of great the city has to offer in the surrounding area. But, yeah, there's some issues. And honestly, to me – that is one of the problems, is that the same conversations that were going on when I moved out here in March of 96 were the same conversations going on in 05, same conversations going on in 2016.
When I started WDIV in 1998, same thing, you know, but just different – a couple different actors, a lot of the same ones. I mean, people forget Mike Duggan was around and like all these people.
Dude, I thought I was having an LSD friggin' flashback the other day when I read on the Free Press that the Freep and Detroit News workers are thinking about going on strike. I'm like, weren't you – wait, what? Wasn't that going on when I moved out here, and how well did that work out for you then?
Yeah.
This is why I say, to me, it's the people and the mentality that are what holds this area back more than anything else. It's that whether it's not understanding or not getting it or not wanting to get it or wanting to – and this is the one that kills me – wanting to put more division and more divisiveness into the conversation.
Well, that divisiveness feeds the power structure.
Absolutely.
That's what it's about. The divisiveness feeds the power structure, and what we need to do is shake that up. And what we need to do is show that Detroit can go forward together, and that means doing things that people think you can't do. I mean, for all the side comments about Gilbert and whatever, and everyone's got him, the one thing I'm always going to hand him credit for is he always looked at his spreadsheet as what happened – but is willing to do stuff and put money where his mouth is to make things happen where everyone else thought he was crazy. And we need 10, 20 more people like that to help push in more people, more energy, more jobs across sectors, not
we
just
– We need 100,000 of those who are getting involved. It doesn't matter if it's sitting out on the front porch saying hi to your neighbors, starting a neighborhood watch, or getting involved in the local elections.
And support the good people that are doing it now.
Do it.
Yeah, support the good people that are doing it now so that they can get critical mass and get over the top.
Jeremy, my favorite comment on social media, like especially when Curb comes out with like, hey, Gilbert bought a building. And my comment is always, if he doesn't rehab it the way I want it, I'm going to complain on the internet. Because it seems like the entire – every time someone buys a building, everybody's bitching.
Oh, my God. He picked an orange color. Oh, my God. His lobby's orange.
Well, and, you know, and for what it's worth, I mean, you know, the whole front porch, back porch thing, I mean, that's kind of become – I see it in our neighborhood. I mean, you know, we have a – you know, we live in a cul-de-sac. It is what it is. We got a little fire pit out back off the back deck. Basically, the entire neighborhood knows, you know, even in the sub behind us, you see the fire pit lit up, come on over. And even if you don't, come on over. I mean, that's I mean, that is what it is. I can see it. Like, and we don't spend a lot of time, out front.
I live in a front porch neighborhood, and it's amazing. It's a completely different thing. You got people upstairs, downstairs, people who go to bars nearby, things like that. It creates a whole different level of social interaction. That's just great.
Well, let's all move our couches out on the front porch and just be Kentuckians.
I wish I did. I wish I could. My porch is too small.
Your porch is too small.
Hey, we're going to
front door. Connie and I did that. We moved our lawn chairs out front every Friday afternoon, and neighbors knew they could stop by.
Nice.
We could have this kind of
just didn't hurt.
No, never do. We could have this conversation all night, but we seriously have to wrap things up. This has been a great episode of episode 140 of the IT and the D Show. We'd like to definitely thank Cass and Thomas from Interworks Technologies, and thank Jeremiah from DailyDetroit.com. The conversation is greatly appreciated, and we always have a good time in this. But hey, we just do it
one last time. Thursday, Blackfin, 5 o'clock start time. Be there.
Yeah, I'll see you there. I look forward to it.
Corner bar stool.
You sound so excited.
Drink up your drinks. Dragon. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. This has been episode 140 of the ITLD Show. We will see you Thursday night or next week on the podcast. Beat it.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your ass. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run. The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over! Nothing! You just don't turn it off!
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so...
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth, Ruth!
Bob loves it in the camp.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, own the truth.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy! Shut up, Mimsy!
I would like be
Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass, go home, unplug, get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
You're so white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me. Show
now! I love this city. I was banging on the wang.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.